I'm Dave Crooks from the DLC Media News Center. On this weekend's Focus on the Community, our candidate previews for the November 8th general election continue. In the race for State Representative District 43, Democrat Tanya Paff is the incumbent. Her Republican challenger is Andrew McNeil. My original plan was to feature both candidates on this weekend's program. However, Mr. McNeil thanked me for reaching out, but he texted me that he would not be doing an interview at this time. So, Representative Paff, it looks like it's just you and me today. Welcome to Focus on the Community.
Oh, thank you for the invite. Thank you for having me here.
Well, here we are. We're approaching the two-week mark until election time, and you've only been in the legislature, what, a couple of terms?
Right. I've been there 4 years.
And for those that need a quick refresher, remind them District 43 is what? Most or all of Eagle County or not?
So it is basically from Park Avenue, so that's North Terre Haute, all the way down to Margaret, and then east, I cover Sealyville, and then all the way to the state line.
But so nothing outside of Vigo County?
No, I have the bulk of mine is Terre Haute. The bulk is the population in Terre Haute.
And I'm kind of jealous because when I served, I had like sometimes 4 and 5 counties out in the rural stick. So I guess
this is a very compact district. It's very nice as far as transportation,
I bet, let alone knocking on doors if you do that occasionally.
Absolutely.
Remind people what you do for a full-time living.
So I am a high school math teacher. This is my 30th year. I can't believe it. And so I've taught at West Vigo. I've taught at South, and now I'm at North. I'm about my 11th year at North. So I teach high school geometry and algebra, and that's my full-time job. And then I decided to run for office. And so, you know, we're a part-time legislature. So I leave in January, and it's either short session or long session. And when I'm there, I don't get paid as a teacher. I get paid as a legislator. And then once I leave that, then I come back to, it's somewhere in the semester, 6 new classes, new students, and I teach to the end of the school year.
Yep. A lot of teachers have served and still, I think, serve in the legislature too, which is kind of neat to have a little bit of everybody serving. That's the idea of a citizen legislature, as you know.
Well, I will tell you, I am the only working teacher.
Is that right?
So out of 150, you have the Senate and the House. I'm the only one that is a working teacher.
Wow, that number has really slipped since
I've
been there.
We have a lot of teachers that are retired.
Yeah.
And then we have like counselors and adult ed teachers, but we don't have any elementary teachers, middle school. I'm the only high school teacher.
So turn the clock back 4+ years ago, and when you decided to get motivated to run for state rep, what was your thinking at that time? Why did you want to serve, and what have you learned, I guess, since you became a state rep 4 years ago?
So I was mad. You know, you got to get angry sometimes.
Right.
So I was mad at what had happened to public education since 2010. And so here I am in the middle of my career, or at the end of my career. And, you know, a lot of things have changed. A lot of funding has changed for school kids. And I was just like, wow. And the representative that was there at the time, Clyde Kersey, he served 22 years, and he decided to step down. He's like, I'm not running for reelection. And so that gave an open seat. And when there's an open seat, that's the time to run.
Absolutely. And Clyde and I got elected the same year, by the way.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
96. First, we were in that same class. Yeah.
So open seat. So I ran and I won, and I've been there 2 terms. And as a state rep, I get to run every 2 years, where senators run 4. So I feel like I'm always running, but I'm also always learning. So what have I learned since I've been there? Indiana is a great place to live. We have so many programs. We have so many possibilities. I mean, if you talk about economic development, you talk about small businesses, you talk about really just the geography of Indiana, it's a great place to live. And because it's such a great place to live, we have a lot of services and we take care of each other. And so one of my committees is budget, which is Ways and Means. And I've only been on there 2 years, so I'm really learning how we are divvying up all this money. So it's really been a fascinating intellectual experience.
Ways and Means is work. I never wanted to be on that committee because those folks have to sit in so many hearings, but you do learn a lot. There's no question about it. So you've been on 1 term in Ways and Means, is that right?
Yes, I have. And so I'm looking forward to more terms on Ways and Means, because I really think that that's such an impactful committee, because you get to help decide and craft the budget where the money goes. And so it's a pretty neat committee to be on.
It's the great educational, I guess you could say, committee, because, and for those that don't understand ways and means, that's where the money is all divvied out from the state standpoint. Anyone in a typical agency who wants money, they have to come to the Ways and Means Committee and propose what they want in the budget. And you guys get to ask lots of questions and say, no, you don't get it, or you do get it, or whatever, you know.
Or in the middle.
Right.
Oh, wow, you're asking for $5 million? How about $2 million?
Right.
And then let's actually see if that money is well used and come back in a couple of years, and we can analyze and say, okay, now do you need more or less?
And I think we're spending, what, 30 plus billion over a two-year biennium these days? Does that sound about right?
Sounds about right.
Okay. Since you've got that education background, have you passed some legislation perhaps that deals with education so far in your 4 years, or have you moved anything through the process yet?
I have. I've had some several amendments go through, but I'm very proud of a bill that I got passed. So a few years ago, we haven't had a state test for graduation for about 10 years, but there used to be, when I was teaching, you had to pass an ISTEP that was math and English. So you go through, so think about this, you go through all your years of high school, middle school, elementary, you get to the final senior year, and you cannot pass either the math or the English, okay? So you decide, I'm just going to drop out. Because if you don't pass one of those tests, or either of them, you don't get a high school diploma.
Right.
So lots of kids, they just got upset. But this bill specifically targets special education, special needs kids. And what happens with them is that they particularly had difficulty, not their fault, passing one or the other, and then they just left high school without a diploma. Now, as you know, you can't join the military without a diploma. You can't, lots of jobs require a high school diploma. So this bill, getting back to the bill, this bill actually goes and finds all the people during that testing window, which was about 10 to 12 years, and it gives them opportunities to either, you have to come back to school to get your GED for purposes, that's the easiest way to explain it, or we give them, offer some opportunity to train for jobs. Because the purpose of this bill is to give people who want to work the ability to go to work, you know, which often, again, is that high school diploma.
Sure.
So I got that passed 2 years ago. And a year ago, we added to it. We added some money to back up to find them. And so now the bill, it's in full force. We're looking, we're finding these kids, and we're giving them opportunity. So that's the one I'm most proud of.
Okay, good for you. Yeah. That sounds like a pretty good piece of public policy. Have you got any goals for next session if you're successful in re-election?
Well, I will definitely sponsor, author the bill again called Project Lifesaver. So what this is, a constituent reached out to me and said, look, I have a child with autism. He's 9 years old, and he left the house, and when you have a kid with autism or family members with dementia, you can buy like a wristband.
Right.
And it's about $300, and they wear it all the time. So her child got out of the house and started walking. Well, in Vigo County, you call the sheriff's department, they have a transmitter, and they can locate the kid because they're wearing the band or the adult. Well, the problem was he got across to Clay County, and they don't have it there.
Ah.
So my idea, we do have it in different places in Indiana. We have it in some cities, some counties, but this bill would make it so it's all over Indiana. It's called GeoCatch, but anyway. And we would catch Indiana so that no matter where a kid goes, or an adult who's just wandering around, you call the sheriff, transmitter, find him immediately. You know, it's a safety bill, really.
Seems like a good idea.
So okay. I introduced it last year. And my Republican co-sponsor said, this is a great bill, all for it, but we didn't open the budget. So he said, come back next year. So we're going to co-author this bill again, if I get reelected, and hopefully put some money from the budget to it and be able to cover and help people.
So with your proposal, would the state help counties like Clay pay for that technology perhaps, or what?
Yeah, so the idea is there's a couple different ways you can go for it, but really it's the transmitters that cost all the money. For the different sheriff departments. And so
sure.
The state could cover that if, depending on the cost, and you know, costs always change, right? If families are in need, that could be an option too, to get the bracelet. So there's many different ways to approach it, but I just think it's an important concept.
We're talking with State Representative Tanya Paff of Terre Haute. She's up for re-election this year in District 43, and her opponent is Andrew McNeil, the Republican. Tanya, obviously, you're in a situation right now at the State House, which was a lot different when I served, but there's a supermajority in both chambers. Makes it kind of challenging. I'm surprised you got anything passed being in the super minority right now. But what kind of stress does that bring you as a minority member when you see the majority just kind of doing whatever they want, whenever they want? I mean, in my days, they'd walk off the floor if they wanted to shut things down. And that's kind of tough for you guys to do right now with the composition.
So it's a different mindset, right? So I know what I'm going into. I know I'm in a super minority, so I have to play the game differently. So a lot of conversations, a lot of committee work, where I go to every member on the committee and I talk to them privately. And so it's a lot of relationship building because, you know, I need to work in a bipartisan manner, and lots of them do as well. Yep. I mean, they appreciate the back and forth. You remember with your time, you know, you make friends there and you don't always agree on everything, but there's a lot that you do agree on.
Absolutely.
And you help tweak each other's bills, right? You help refine them. So if, you know, a Republican in the supermajority offers a bill and I go up to him and I said, hey, have you thought about this? They're like, oh, that's a good idea. Please offer an amendment. So I've gotten a lot of amendments passed either in committee or a couple on the floor. So that's kind of, again, it's, you just play the game differently than when you were there.
You're doing it well, though. That's even when I served, you would sometimes, you may not even file a bill because you would be worried about, well, if I can't get the bill to move, then I'm going to screw up my opportunity to offer the amendment on the floor because they'll just yell bill pending and you'll have to deal with the other side pointing that out on the Rules Committee, you know? So
that's part of the strategy that goes with it as well. So, you know, I'll have a bunch of bills and then I have to decide which I file and which I save for amendments.
Yeah.
And so for the people listening, just so you know, that rule does not apply in the Senate. So you can offer a bill and then it dies or gets killed and then you can bring it back again as an amendment and it's fine.
Sure.
But in the House, yeah, it's a no-go.
You guys were in special session earlier this summer and the timing was interesting. They were expecting the Supreme Court to come out with the Roe versus Wade decision. And of course, that even leaked through the national media before they officially made that decision to overthrow Roe versus Wade with the Dobbs decision. And Indiana was the first state to rush to legislation to make abortion much more stricter. There's very few ways to get an abortion now, it seems like, in Indiana. What's your thoughts on that, and where did you finally land on the final vote?
I tell you, those were the two hardest weeks I've had since I've been there in 4 years. I watched grown senators and representatives, grown men and women, cry. Abortion is just such a complicated and such a very personal decision. We heard a lot of testimony from both sides, right? And I personally thought that 2 weeks was very rushed. I mean, there's so many complications that can happen when you give birth, during pregnancy. There's just so many complications. And at the end of the day, it's such a personal choice. You know, it's a healthcare decision. And I believe that that should be up to the woman, their partner, and the doctor. That's it. I don't think the government should be forcing people to have children with all the things that can happen.
Sure. Well, and, you know, I don't like people to abuse the right to an abortion, even though, you know, a lot of people don't want any abortions ever. But I think sometimes, you know, there could be a medical problem. Or now I'm looking at the bigger picture. Since this law was passed, I was stunned to see, you know, Lilly and some of these other larger companies expressing very deep concerns about what it might do when it comes to attracting talent from around the country or around the world. But then you have IU Med Center and some of our other, you know, medical outlets in Indianapolis and elsewhere. They're very nervous about this now. Can you explain why they're so concerned?
As they should be. So I just read an article today. It's titled "Abortion Access Looms Over Medical Residency Applications." And so what that means is, you know, we have rural healthcare deserts anyway, right? So a lot of people can't get to the doctor to have a baby. It's a 45-minute hour drive to the hospital. So then we put a legislation like this, and you're a resident, you're thinking about going to med school, and let's say you don't agree with this for lots of legal reasons, whatever, you won't come to Indiana. So you won't even do your residency here. So
right. It's
not an easy... It's just not an easy fix to anything. It affects so many different aspects of what we're doing in Indiana. We also heard from corporations that came out and said, you know, we're moving or we're not coming. So the legislate, the bills that we pass, the laws that we make, do affect so many different aspects of any one certain concept. And I think that's what a lot of people don't realize. You can't just say, oh, yes or no. You have to look at everything. There's so many pieces that go with legislation.
Well, you know this. A couple of years ago, they found a big old golf ball-sized tumor in my head on the edge of my brain. And I went right to IU Med Center, found the best surgeon they had, Dr. Shaw. 10 days later, I'm under the knife. They took it out and got some of the best health care I could find anywhere in the country, just right up the road in Indianapolis. But now I worry, okay, so if some of the best and brightest doctors don't want to come to Indiana to practice medical care, it's going to affect more than just women wanting an abortion.
Yes, it's going to affect your workforce. It's going to affect companies that want to come here. Because let's say we, you know, so let's go off onto, well, anyway, let's say we're trying to recruit these big companies to come, and they look at our healthcare, which we are the seventh highest hospital stay in the country.
Wow.
So don't go to the hospital now. I'm glad you're okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at something like that, and so all these bills that we have and all these rules that we have, we've got to be able to attract business to Indiana. Our workers are leaving. Our population fell down in Vigo County. Our population fell down in, you know, went down in Terre Haute. I'm not sure around here. I'm pretty sure it's the same.
It's pretty much most of rural Indiana.
Yeah, it's dwindling.
Yeah, it's tough. And Davies County might be one of the only few exceptions in this quadrant of the state. They've had some growth. But most other rural counties in west central Indiana, we're seeing a decline.
And people are moving out for a variety of reasons. And so as a state, again, we need to attract companies, right? So the more restrictive bills that we pass, the more that hurts everyone. Again, we want people to work. We want people to live here. We want people to stay here. But we can't keep doing things on a state level that makes people want to leave.
It's kind of reminds me when Mike Pence was governor and they had the big, what, the RFRA debate, when, and that was a big mess. And that caught the attention of all these national and international employers. And it didn't put Indiana in a favorable light, despite the fact that
we lost conventions because of it.
Absolutely.
Again, you know, this is tourism. We can go into tourism. We can delve into all that and how it affects people even wanting to come. And then you look at the younger generation, right? The people in their 20s, you know, college or no college, they have to decide where to live. Well, if they come and they see different bills and they're like, I don't want to live in a state like that, then they'll leave.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just affects, it's so much more than just about abortion. It's, you know, there's just so much that goes on.
Let's talk about a few other issues. Ways and means, you see a little bit of everything from a financial standpoint, or at least that affects, you know, the state's revenue picture. We're in pretty good shape financially. What, we got $5-6 billion in reserves, and I think
6.1 for right now, but I think it's still growing actually.
Okay. And I think a lot of that has to do with the Fed's help too with the COVID money, but we've also been pretty good stewards, I think, over the years too. I think with Indiana's careful,
I would agree.
Yeah, budget process, which I think both sides have tried to be careful, I think, from that standpoint. But what would you like to see happen next year that maybe from the budget standpoint that would be good for education, for instance, if you had the chance?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not one of those people that wants to blow $6 billion.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There's no reason for that. So we definitely need our rainy day fund. But when we have so much money that we're taxing our own citizens, that we have to give refund checks. You know, back in March, we had to give $125 back to people.
Right.
That was because we collected too much. The $200 that we just passed during special session, it's because we're taxing you and taking too much of your money. So when you say, you know, what do you want to do? Well, one thing I don't want to do is keep taxing everybody so much. You know, it's good to have a surplus, but by law, by Indiana law, once you reach 12.5% above your total, you have to give money back.
Sure.
So that's one of the things I would like to do is, you know, lower some taxes on that. But we need to invest in education. So let's talk about workforce. It's hard for me. I'm a mom of four kids and I'm married, but it's hard for me to find daycare. So we don't have adequate daycare or affordable daycare. So let's go all the way back to pre-K. We are ranked the dead last in money spent for pre-K for kids.
Last?
Dead
wow.
last, 50th.
Wow.
We do not spend money on pre-K. And how does that affect people? So let's go from the teaching angle. In the state of Indiana, you don't have to go to school until 7 years old. Okay? I always thought it was five. It's seven. So we have people that keep their kids at home until age seven, and then they go to kindergarten at age seven. Well, by the time they get to high school, think how far behind they are. You know, if you're coming in to kindergarten and you're seven and you're with people who've been in pre-K and they're 5 years old, you're already behind and you don't catch up.
Yeah. And I can remember Frank O'Bannon proposing pre-kindergarten.
Yep.
And they did, I think, a test run at that time. But at this point, we still got a long way to go when it comes to that, don't we?
So because of that, you know, that's one of the many factors. It's really hard for us. You know, I would invest in education. So I would invest in pre-K. I would invest in our public schools. You know, everybody, it's the great equalizer, right? You can be poor, rich, from wherever. You go to school, you have a chance to be whomever you want. So that's why I'm such a big advocate for education. But we need resources, especially since COVID. COVID lag is real. You know, there's a lot that went on for 2 years that kids are behind. They
sure.
just are. So we've got to spend money on getting our students back to where they should be so that we can compete again with other states internationally for businesses and other opportunities.
We've got a couple of minutes left. Anything else you'd like to share on either ideas if you're reelected or just the bottom line to the people of District 43? Why should they send you back to the State House next year?
Well, before I tell you why you should send me back, I'm a big advocate of voting. So please vote. At the end of the day, you need to vote. It doesn't matter if you're Democrat, Republican, Independent, go vote. I've been voting, I think, in almost every election since I was 18.
Yeah, me too.
And it's just, you can't complain if you don't vote, right?
Absolutely.
So, and the way Indiana works is we have such a low voter turnout. We have very safe and secure elections. I'm on the election committee. I can say that. I know lots of laws that we have put in place. We are safe and secure.
And despite the disinformation, I think most states are that way too. But
I would agree, but yeah. I just like to talk about Indiana. And so for me, the best thing you can do is get involved, learn the candidates. Don't just go in there and push a button and say, okay, I'm, you know, straight ticket voting. Learn who's running, learn why they're running, and take the time to vote. I think it's the best thing you can do, you know, for everyone's sake.
I've got a friend who lives in Queensland, Australia. And if you don't go vote in Australia when it's election time, they send you a fine. It's like $85 a person. So that's the extra hammer they use there down under.
Maybe that should be the next yeah. Legislation yeah. I attempt.
It's not a bad concept, I guess. But I think I see your point. We've all got to take a little more time. And I know a lot of people look at politics, especially right now, and it seems ugly. But hey, I'm so glad that you and others at least want to run, even your opponent. I mean, we got to have people that will step up and want to serve. And if we keep making this look so ugly, we're not going to have the best and brightest that serve in public service.
You know, and that's another thing, that it's really not that ugly on the state level.
I agree.
I think the media, you know, there's a lot of people that focus on what's happening nationally. But in the State House, I mean, I can say this, we really do get along.
Absolutely.
And you were there. You understand. Again, we may disagree on ways to spend the budget or, you know, other issues. But at the end of the day, we'll walk out together. You know, we'll have dinner together. And, you know, we're all just good Hoosiers living here trying to make the best.
We've got the country's only unique General Assembly retirement group. And we just met in Peru a couple of months ago. And it was a great event. We got to see a lot of people that we served together with years gone by from both sides. But I can recall even having some fierce fights over education and other things on the floor. And then session's over about midnight. We're all ready to go out and unwind and have a drink. And you get to know someone from across the state from another party and what they do and what their part of the state looks like. And you learn a lot about the state, let alone you make friends. And I really think before someone can run for federal office, let alone president, they ought to be forced to serve in a state assembly, because that's where the real action really is happening. So
well, you just learn at the end of the day, everybody, whatever their opinion is trying to do the best for Hoosiers. And I think that's what people don't understand about politicians. Even locally, you know, if you're running for school board, you're running for city council, you're running for town council, whatever. I mean, most people, they go into the job, let's face it, there's not a lot of power or money in it. So you go into the job wanting to do well, good for others. And that's the basic public servant attitude. And that's, I think, why I like it.
And by the way, by statute, for those that think, oh, they get on school board and they make a big check and they get insurance. No, by statute, it's $2,000 a year. That's the stipend. That's all you get.
Can't go any higher.
Yeah. So, I mean, I applaud anyone who wants to run for school board and who will give up all that time and effort for $2,000 a year. You know, that's not a lot of money to serve, but we need people to step up and do it. You got a minute left. Make your final plea on why people should vote for you in this upcoming election.
Well, first of all, I think I do a good job. So I would like your vote because, you know, I have really good constituent services. I'm fighting for everyone. I'm not fighting for the D's or the R's. I'm fighting for all people in my district and in Indiana. So I think I do a good job of representing everybody. And as a teacher, I'm so used to getting along with all walks of life, all kinds of different personalities, that I think it gives me a really good temperament to just enjoy the process and work with so many different personalities to get things done.
And if people want more information about you, is there a website or something they can go to, or Facebook or anything?
It is called www.tanyapaff.com, and also Tanya Paff for Indiana on Facebook and Instagram.
And spell your last name for those.
Sure.
That, yeah.
I married it. So it's P as in Paul, F as in Frank, A as in Apple, F as in Frank, F as in Frank.
And we have to mention this. Your maiden name is Nation, which, you know, Fred, your dad. And, of course, everybody seems to know Fred in Terre Haute. So
that would have been such a good name, Tanya Nation.
Then you could run for national office.
That's right. But, that's right.
Well,
Who knows?
Well, Tanya, it's always good to see you. Thanks for taking time to be on the program. And best of luck in the upcoming election.
Thank you so much.
This has been Focus on the Community, produced by the DLC Media News Center. This program is broadcast Saturday mornings at 6 a.m. on 104.9 WAXI, 7 a.m. on WAMB, FM 99.5, 106.9 or AM 1130, Sundays at 6 a.m. on 105.5 WVIG, and 7 a.m. on Sunday on 92.7 WFMB. For a download of this show and past programs, visit any one of our radio station websites. I'm Dave Crooks. Thanks for listening.